Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, December 19th, 2018. The Army now admits going after General Cirillo's rebel group, saying they're a threat to the country. And two men are sentenced to death for killing a Kenyan Catholic priest. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. 2 days after the National Salvation Front accused the South Sudan Army of attacking its positions in two separate areas, the Army now says it will launch a military offensive against the holdout rebel group, led by former Deputy Chief of Defense Forces General Thomas Cirillo. NAS refused to sign the September peace deal. South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lual Roy Kwong says the government considers NAS a threat to the country's stability. Waki Simon-Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Addressing reporters at Army headquarters in Juba this morning, a military spokesman, Major General Kwong, did not mince his words.
We are going to fight now because they have chosen war. Lobanok is not very far from here. And that's why I said we cannot live comfortable in Juba with rebels at our backyard. We know the bushes here. Those who are here, who are within our reach, we'll hunt them down and deal with them.
NASA spokesman Soba Samuel told the South Sudan in Focus yesterday government forces attacked rebel positions in two areas, Yei and Lobono County of Jubek State, on Sunday. Kwong denies South Sudan People's Defense Force soldiers attacked the rebel group's positions and says the rebels attacked government positions in Goli and Lobanok over the weekend, killing four government officers and wounding 15 others.
We have a feeling that NAS is terrorizing the people of South Sudan. It's a terrorist outfit. And we have a feeling that it is leader General Thomas Cirillo, his people's and state enemy number one. And from our perspective, Thomas Cirillo is a legitimate high-value target that should be neutralized. We also consider NAS spokesperson as a person who must be silenced for glorifying acts of terror, and is also polarizing the nation. To us, in SSPDF, NAS must be fought and wiped out.
While mediators and the parties that signed the September peace agreement, including Riek Machar's SPLM-IO, say the deal addresses South Sudan's major problems, Cirillo's group says the latest deal is not realistic and fails to address the country's key problems. In October, President Salva Kiir told thousands of people in Juba celebrating the signing of the revitalized agreement his government would work to bring on board rebel groups that did not sign the peace agreement. Kwong is calling on regional leaders and the international community to convince holdout groups to join the peace process.
The region, TROIKA, IGAD and AU, has a role to play in ensuring that Thomas Cirillo joins the peace agreement. Before he does that, and before he's convinced to join the peace agreement, we'll make sure that the bushes that we have in South Sudan is a living hell for NAS fighters. We'll make sure that we follow them wherever they are. We know they are high-ups here in Jubek State and also in Yei River State. We cannot allow rebellion to flourish at our backyard here in Lobanok.
Kwong says despite the clashes in Lobanok, the security situation across the country has improved since the signing of the revised peace agreement. He says recent meetings between rebel commanders and government security officials in various locations have helped the two sides uphold the cessation of hostilities agreement. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon-Wudu in Juba.
A judge in Gok State has sentenced two men to death by hanging and two others to 10-year prison terms after the high court found them guilty of murdering a Kenyan Catholic priest last month. Winnie Serino has more for VOA from Juba.
Kenyan priest Father Victor Luke Odhiambo was murdered in his home on November 14th. According to a final court order signed by presiding judge Yai Anyuan Akot, 25-year-old Chol Yeu Maibok and 24-year-old Lito Mashiek Chol are sentenced to death by hanging. 24-year-old Mandela Kut and 23-year-old James Oak, both soldiers from South Sudan People's Defense Force, were sentenced to 10 years in prison. Gok State Information Minister John Madel says the court adhered to sections 48, 72, and 206 of the South Sudan Penal Code Act of 2008 in sentencing the four men, all of whom hail from Gok State.
What happened on the 17th of this month was that the court has ruling to announce against no suspect who were accused of killing Father Victor, the Catholic priest, last month. So the Gok State High Court has sentenced two people to death and two people for a term not exceeding 10 years.
Madel says Kut and Oka received lighter sentences because they were positioned as lookouts around Father Odhiambo's house, but did not take part in the killing.
Those two who have been convicted have confessed it before the court that they are responsible for the killing of the Catholic priest. And the motive behind the killing of Catholic priest was that they were looking for money.
But Madel says the men did not find what they were looking for and decided to kill Father Victor Odhiambo. Father Samuel Abey, Secretary General of the Juba Catholic Archdiocese, says he was very sad to hear about the priest's murder in cold blood, but says all the church wants now is for justice to prevail. Father Bay says the church teaches that when someone makes a mistake and confesses, that person should be punished but not killed as payback, but it cannot interfere with the government system of justice.
The government has taken its own hand the responsibility of showing justice, and as the court proceeded, we are convinced that the justice has been done, and as a church and in particular as a priest, we would have said the people who confess that they did, either the punishment could be relaxed to imprisonment than you know, taking life again. Because the church always do not promote an eye for an eye.
Father Manuel Omolo, who is with the Mill Hill Missionary from Uganda, says the suspect's arrest was a relief to the family and to the Jesuit congregation of which Father Odhiambo belonged, but he does not condone death by hanging for the convicted killers.
Well, we know life belongs to God. No one can take someone else's life. Victor Odhiambo had a right to live as long as God wanted him to live in this world. And surely we condemn this act of the murder of Father Victor Odhiambo. And those who have been arrested now, the idea of hanging them, that is not the idea of the Catholic Church. That is not a Christian act. The Church believes in giving someone else a second chance.
Sister Veronica Daniel, a member of the Juba-based Congregation of the Sisters of Sacred Heart, encourages people to respect the Ten Commandments of the Bible. She says she is not happy with the court order to hang the two suspects, but she respects the country has laws to abide with.
I personally, I cannot say that it should not take place because we, the church, respect what comes from the government and we cannot go against it. Maybe as a human being, we will not encourage killing, but whatever been passed in the court, we cannot go against it.
Earlier this month, Amnesty International issued a statement calling on the South Sudan government to halt all executions. Amnesty says the South Sudan government has carried out more executions this year alone than it has done in any year since gaining independence in 2011. And the group says it fears for the lives of 135 people on death row. That number could not be verified by South Sudan Infocus. The judge presiding in the case gave the four convicted men 15 days within which to appeal their verdicts. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Meanwhile, in another South Sudan courtroom, eight teenagers were sentenced to 5 years in a reformatory house, while four other teens got 2 years probation today for killing another teenager in a rival gang last February. Defense lawyer Godfrey Victor Balu says the five-year terms are severe considering that some of the teenagers are just students. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
The 12 juveniles aged 10 to 17 were arrested the same day. They were accused of collectively killing another boy with machetes, sticks and knives in an act of mob justice in Dongoda village, just a few kilometers north of Juba town. According to court testimony, the two rival gangs of teenagers, one called D12 and the other called Outlaws, were fighting over control of certain neighborhoods in the area. In the ensuing violence, the deceased, who belonged to the D-12 gang, was killed by members of the rival group. The 12 teens were arrested later that day and charged under Article 206 and 48 of the South Sudan's Penal Code, presiding Judge Nicola Makur Akol.
Given the fact that they are all under 18, which means they are children, they will not be sentenced to death penalty. It's as it is provided in Section 09 of the Penal Code Act 2008. Nor would they be sentenced to imprisonment, but they will be sentenced to be sent to the reformatory.
Judge Akol also sentenced four juveniles under the age of 12 to a two-year probation, meaning they will be reporting to the Juba Central Police Division every Monday for 2 years. Article 138 of the South Sudan Child Act states that no child under 12 years of age shall be prosecuted for a criminal offense. Also, Section 30 of the 2008 South Sudan Penal Code Act states that children under 12 cannot be charged for criminal offense, but Section 31 of the same law says a child above the age of 12 is presumed to be liable of committing a criminal offense. Akol says the dozens juveniles will also pay blood compensation of up to 12 cows and dozens of goats to the aggrieved family. The eight teenagers, sentenced to 5 years in a reformatory house, are students and will be allowed to attend classes each morning, but then report back to the reformatory. Speaking in Arabic, Joseph Lado, one of the parents of the children sentenced today, says he is satisfied with the ruling.
The judge's decision is good because, given that these are children, the sentence ensures that their future is not wasted for the fact that they will be allowed to go to school. It's good. And what can we do? Because what the judge has ruled is final.
The 12 juveniles were provided free legal aid by the Human Rights Observatory, a Juba-based legal rights advocacy group. Executive Director Godfrey Victor Bula says his group intervened after the investigator had inflated the ages of the children, something that he says would have made it possible for teenagers to be sentenced to death. Bula says the children were acting in self-defense during the fighting with teenagers in the rifle gang.
It shouldn't have been excessive. It shouldn't be aggressive. The judgment has to be proportional. Proportional, when we're talking about the proportional, we are talking about the looking at the circumstance, looking at the age of the children, and looking even at the best interests of these children, the future of these children. So all these factors has to be taken into consideration when it is a decision has to be issued against the juvenile.
Bula says dozens of people are currently on the death row in South Sudan, including children who have been tried in court without the help of a lawyer. South Sudan in Focus could not verify that statement. Prosecuting attorney Mansour Al-Samani declined to comment on the court's verdict. Both parties have 15 days to appeal the ruling. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What was the president of Sudan doing in Syria over the weekend? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for life. The fact that I am able to live a full life and be able to do the kind of things that I want to do.
I'm very thankful for my life, my children, and my job. My job helps me to get money. I'm very, very thankful for that.
I thank Allah for my life and for my parents.
I'm grateful because I've attained at least education. Education is going to help me get a job and get other opportunities in life.
I'm thankful for my family, my friends, my husband, my children, and all the lovely friends of mine who have been helpful to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese leader Omar al-Bashir traveled to Damascus on Sunday, catching many observers by surprise. According to Arab media, the visit is part of a Russian strategy to rehabilitate the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad and reintegrate his government into mainstream Arab politics. Edward Uranian has the story for VOA from Cairo.
Syrian TV appeared to be caught by surprise, like most other observers, when it announced the visit of Sudanese leader Omar al-Bashir to Damascus on Sunday. It was the first visit by an Arab head of state to the Syrian capital since the Assad government was expelled from the Arab League in 2011. Saudi-owned Ashark al-Awsat newspaper reports the main purpose of the visit was to deliver a message that major Arab nations are willing to allow Damascus to rejoin the Cairo-based Arab League. The fact that Bashir, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court, traveled to Syria on board a Russian plane suggests some measure of Russian eagerness to rehabilitate both Bashir and Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who has been ostracized by most Western leaders. University of Paris political science professor Khattar Abu Dieb tells VOA he thinks the Sudanese president is flirting between the United States and Russia to see what he can get financially, given Sudan's current economic difficulties. He says the irony of the Bashir visit to Damascus is that both the Sudanese and Syrian presidents are suffering from economic difficulties, but neither has much of anything in the way of financial support to offer to each other. Abu Dieb says Bashir is an opportunist who has been allies with just about everyone from Iran to Saudi Arabia and to Turkey and Qatar, with whom he shares sympathies with the Muslim Brotherhood. American University of Beirut political science teacher Hilal Kashan tells VOA he believes Bashir traveled to Damascus at the urging of Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and Russian President Vladimir Putin.
It is obvious to me that the Saudis urged al-Bashir, who is the recipient of their financial aid, to travel to Damascus to pave the road for Syria's reintegration in the Arab League. Remember, when Mohammed bin Salman visited Buenos Aires recently for the 20th summit, the only guy who welcomed warmly was Putin. So I think Putin convinced Mohammed bin Salman to do something about Assad in order to reintegrate Syria in the Arab League.
Russia has maintained backing for the Assad government throughout Syria's civil war. 2 years ago, Russia withdrew from the International Criminal Court, which it called one-sided. Sudanese President Bashir is wanted by the court for alleged crimes against humanity in Sudan's Darfur region. He has periodically defied the court by traveling abroad to countries that declined to arrest him. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
We now turn to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the increasingly tense presidential election campaign has come to a sudden stop just 2 days early in the capital. Kinshasa Governor Andre Kimbuta, who's a member of the ruling coalition, today said there is credible information that extremists in the political camps were planning a confrontation in the streets ahead of Sunday's balloting. The news broke as supporters of opposition candidate Martin Fayulu were putting up stands in an open field after they were told yesterday that their original rally site had been ruled out. The ruling only affects presidential candidates. Parliamentary candidates are continuing to campaign, but they generally draw much smaller crowds. President Joseph Kabila says he will continue a peaceful handover of power after 17 years in office. He handpicked the ruling party's candidate and has not ruled out running for president again. VOA reporter Abdurrahman Dia is in Kinshasa and spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander.
The governor of Kinshasa has just published a communique saying that based on credible information that they have, that says that some supporters of different candidates might be causing trouble in the capital. And for that reason, all campaign rallies are cancelled for the presidential candidates only for the two days that are remained in the campaign. So that comes as a surprise to the Fayulu camp, which was supposed to have a big rally today. But the trouble actually started yesterday with a decision from the stadium where he was supposed first to hold the meeting, basically saying that they could not hold it over there. So they have decided instead today to have the rally in an open field. And even with that, now the police is there dismantling the stand where Fayulu was supposed to speak from.
So do you think that this is a genuine concern?
It's hard to say. I mean, they are saying that they have credible information from different security services. But already the reaction from the Fayulu supporters on social media is that this is one more proof that they are really afraid of him, that he is a real threat to them. So it's hard to say whether those are credible information or not, but this is where we are now. Both camps are basically saying different things, but Fayulu people are very disappointed. They were expecting to have that major rally and show that their candidate is very popular here in Kinshasa.
Doesn't it seem a little strange that they ban presidential campaigning, but they allow the parliamentary candidates to keep working?
Yes, but those other elections draw little crowds, so they are not basically a threat, I think. However, Fayulu and Tshisekedi and even Ramazani Shadary, the candidate of the ruling party, definitely they would draw thousands and thousands of people. Whether they would be able to maintain the order or not is another story.
Do you think this is related in any way to the U.S. Embassy's order for non-essential staff to leave?
At least the communique doesn't say that. They say they have their own information, and their decision is based on those credible information they said they have.
Has there been any immediate reaction? How do things look on the streets now?
On the streets right now, it's pretty calm. I was just talking to someone over the phone who said that the police is at the place where the rally of Fayulu was supposed to take place, and there were also people supposed to, that was there starting to gather, and we were actually about to head there when we just got the information that the meeting, the rally wasn't going to happen anymore.
How do you think this affects the country's promise for fair and credible elections?
I think it is another hurdle on the whole process, because people are not done talking about how far behind the Electoral Commission is on delivering all the election material, and now the candidates are not allowed to campaign here, where they were expecting to end their campaign in a big way, and now apparently it's not going to happen. Now it's probably going to be an end of a campaign that is very, if I may say, boring. Well, but who knows?
That's VOA reporter Abdurrahman Dia speaking to my colleague Paul Alexander from Kinshasa earlier today. Finally, a young South Sudanese computer engineer who developed a card game called Janoob Games is challenging his counterparts to take education seriously. Mayen Lual says education changed his behavior and he's able to see the world from a different point of view. He tells John Tanza, unfortunately, most young people in South Sudan have given up hope on a better future.
I'm planning very soon to go back to South Sudan. As I say, we had a meeting with Deng Deng, the Honorable Minister. So we are planning on how I can go back and how to train people. As you say before, how do I give back to the people? I want to train people on how to make games. I don't want to be like the only South Sudanese making video game. I want the next award to be given, like to be won by South Sudanese. So we have the capability as South Sudanese. You know, what I always tell people is that, you know, the way people think about us right now as South Sudanese, what comes into their mind is war, war, war. But as the young South Sudanese, we have to redefine the way people think about us. We have the capability, we have the energy, we have the talent. Because if you see, we have gone through a lot.
Why do you think South Sudanese like fighting?
If you don't educate people, and then what comes into their mind, it's more than what they think. Because if you are educated, you know that, oh, there's someone like Obama, I can become like him, there's someone like Oprah Winfrey. But most of the young people have no inspiration. The few that have inspiration are the people that say, no, gun is not the solution. Because when I have the gun, someone is going to kill me, and I'm not going to reach to a place like Obama. So, like, that is the idea. So we have to educate them. We have to advocate that they are more than what they think. They can be able to, like, you know, they can be able to, like, become big. They can be able to thrive. And, you know, and that's how we give a new image of South Sudanese.
And so what is next? After your Junub game, you have won the award, yeah, and you are translating it into several languages. Yeah. You want people in South Sudan to play the game. What is next? What do you have in store for us?
Yeah, like, what's next? I'm going to work on a VR game, like virtual reality. So, like, virtual reality is a new technology, and I want people to experience a different thing. And I'm not going to reveal, like, the name of what I'm working on.
Of course, it's a secret. You don't want somebody to copy.
Yeah, so, like, I'm excited about that. What is next? I want to have, like, the biggest game studio that is working for peace and conflict resolution in the world. And I want us to be known of that, and something that is actually coming from South Sudan. It has really given me so much hope, yeah.
And so have you been to school?
In terms of game development, I'm a self-trainer. I train myself. But when it comes to, you know, I did software engineering in Uganda at Makerere University, something I'm really happy with. It's a great
school. So you have a degree in software engineering?
Yeah, in software engineering, yeah.
All right. Mm. If there is one message you want to really give out to youth in South Sudan, young people like you, boys and girls, what would that message be?
As a young South Sudanese, I would tell you that we have a great future. I would tell you that it could be better. I would tell you that let's not focus on our past. Let's focus on where we are right now. The last thing, like, I want to tell, like, the young South Sudanese in the diaspora is that let's not forget where we come from, because it's our identity. And when we are here, we have the opportunities. Let's utilize them. You know, like, I've been in the U.S. right now for about 1.5 years. And a lot of people that I've interacted with have been asking me, like, it's like you've been here for 10 years. You have everything. You have all the connection. And I will say, yes. The reason, because I came here not to be taken up by what I see. I know what I came for. And, you know, I have to work hard and utilize the opportunities that have been given here by this country.
That's award-winning gamer Mayen Lual, inventor of Junub Game. He was speaking to my colleague John Tanza last week here in our studios in Washington, D.C. And that is our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Gor Gor by Khaled Musica. We've been listening to Khaled Musica with a song Gor Gor, and I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for making us a part of your evening. If you'd like to share a comment about something you heard on the show, you can find us on Twitter with our handle at VOA South Sudan. If you're planning to be out of Juba and can't tune us in on a FM radio station, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 1185 kHz and 13865 kHz and 1518 kHz. We hope to find you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.